Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the April 29th edition of Commodity Week. It seemed for a moment this week that corn was teetering on the brink, and then it rallied back to finish higher. Can December new crop manage to break through the 670 range? We'll ask these and many more questions today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our guest later in this half hour will be Tom Baez. He's with Growth Energy out of Washington, D.C. In studio today, Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing, or TGM, from Windsor, Illinois. Dale Durkles of AgriVisor LLC out of Bloomington, Illinois. And Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Let's open our discussion with this question. On Thursday afternoon during the closing market report, I suggested that it was an outside week and that it would have to rally pretty strong in order to finish higher rather than lower for the week in the corn market. It managed to make that rally. Did it surprise you?
It surprised me the extent, I guess, that we went down yesterday, and it surprised me a little bit the extent we came back up today. This market has obviously been very volatile for some time. And, you know, the way that we closed the week out, I think maybe stabilized things a little bit to where people weren't thinking that the bottom was going to fall out of the market. I still think that there's several factors we need to consider before we think that the market's just going to keep marching significantly higher.
That's Matt Bennett with TGM. Dale Durkles is with AgriVisor.
Well, the way I look at the game at this point, you know, you have two against one right here. And looking at corn specifically, the key to the whole game still lies in the wheat trade. Wheat came dangerously close overnight on Friday to breaking down through another technical point, which would open it up to run to $7. And as much as people want to still have this argument that we aren't going to feed soft wheat, the threat is going to remain there. So it's really the plight of the wheat trade that's going to really kind of key and clue the old crop corn trade.
And Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities.
Yeah, I think it surprised everybody how far it went and then how far it came back. And it shows you the volatility just on a weather forecast of drier in the western Midwest and then wetter in the western Midwest. And then you had fun selling like crazy on Thursday too. But it just shows you how volatile we can be because we do have fairly tight supply. And if we don't grow a good crop, who knows where it'll go.
Dale, you said it was two against one. Which two and which one?
Well, the corn market's the odd man out. The beans and the wheat, you know, both of those are sort of equitably priced relative to each other in a sense. And both of those are really relatively cheap relative to corn market right now. So, you know, to me, at this point, you really become a wheat bean analyst. And the corn's going to be dominated by, in one sense, whatever those other two do. Corn can't pull the freight.
May corn, a high this week of $7.71, a low at $7.15.5, a settlement price there at $7.54, up 16.75. December corn at $6.69.5. That's up 4 cents. Corn can't pull the freight. Do you agree with that particular comment?
Well, there's a real tug of war going on here. Obviously, we're wanting corn acres, but the spring isn't exactly cooperating with what we want. Yeah, relatively speaking, corn price is fairly high, but we have to consider, you know, what do we need to be able to get into next year's crop? And we've been saying all along we were going to be on a short carryout. So, you know, whenever we push planting back, you know, potentially 4 weeks, maybe 5 or 6 weeks, depending on what it may be, you know, and they talk about excess rain in the south, in the corn crop isn't exactly that's been planted in great shape, it definitely puts corn in a position where maybe it can be a little higher price, relatively speaking. So I don't necessarily think that it's going to take off and run significantly higher based upon the fact that wheat and beans are relatively priced lower. But I do think, on the other hand, that it's going to stay fairly strong until we get the crop in the ground.
You know, the one thing to think about here, and a lot of people really, really need to go back and look at history. You know, they talk about flood issues, and we're in a flood issue in the southern part of the Corn Belt right now. But, you know, when you look back, and I was looking at some records today, the 93 flood, that peaked out real late. And actually, St. Louis peaked out water level on August 1st. 2008 peaked out July 1. You know, we're still really early in the window. And you know, our planting pace nationally right now is real close to where we were in 08. And, yes, it puts a burden on the market, puts a burden on the summer growing season, but we raised trend yields in 2008. This year that had put us just over 160 bushel to the acre. So, you know, you can't count it out yet because, like it or not, it's still not May 1.
It's not May 1. It's not May 10. The wheat does kind of rule the roost, but unless we start getting some planting progress, if we come up the second Monday from now and it's still only under 20% because it's been wet, we're going to see all kind of things go off. The last 2 weeks, we hit 684. This week in December, we hit 684 a week ago, and then we dropped like a rock both weeks due to all the outside stuff. And I think it's just so volatile that we can't tell until, as Matt said, we get things planted. And right now in the Midwest, I don't see much planting progress till after May 10th.
So I've got all three of you thinking that wheat rules the roost at the moment. Is that right? Everybody is in agreement? We've got to follow the wheat and see what happens there?
Wheat can drag things down, but if we don't get corn planted in the next 2 weeks, corn can be king for a while.
Yeah, like I said, I think there's just a lot of pressure on getting corn in the ground in a fairly timely fashion moving forward. You'd hate to see us get into the late May, early June time frame, not only for the fact that yields would be diminished, as to one of the reports that you ran today, but also, Todd, you know, you got to think the carryout is a big situation. You know, we're worried about whether we're going to be able to get into new crop corn.
All right. Let me come back and take a look at a number again. So December corn ended at $6.69.5. It was up 4 cents for the week. The three of you are telling me that wheat futures are leading corn, potentially beans, lower at this point, or holding the limit on the top side, I think maybe a better way of putting it, that they're limiting the move upwards. Wheat futures were off 30 and a quarter in the nearby May. They finished at 769 and a quarter. Their top was at $8.30, their bottom at 736 and a half. The July harvest month there was down 33 and a half cents at $8 a penny and a quarter. What happens has to happen for wheat not to drag the rest of this market lower?
You know, you probably have to see the little bit of a weather shift that we had this week, giving us some rains down in the southern plains, and albeit we're still going to have a lot of abandonment down there, but at least helping the crop that ultimately may be harvested. We also had rains across over in parts of Western Europe, and I think that's still a thing. The other thing we have to acknowledge here in the wheat is that we're also talking about the northern plains starting to shift into maybe a warmer, drier pattern too. So that takes some of your pressure off the spring wheat crop at this point, and maybe allows it to become a little bit more defensive if that forecast holds its sway as well. So it's still a key thing. You know, the one thing that a lot of people don't appreciate about wheat at this point, and there's been a lot of comparisons at different times this winter, spring to 1996. The old crop wheat in 1995, we had a carryout of 396 million bushel, or 395. This year, we're going to be somewhere in excess of 850 million. You know, we are not short of old crop wheat, and that makes a different environment in the game compared to what we had back then.
Is the spread wide enough between corn and wheat?
Well, it sure appears that, in my opinion, I think that, I don't know. Yeah, don't know.
Here's my thought, I guess. I'm looking and thinking, okay, so you've got new wheat at $8 and a penny and a quarter, and you've got new corn at $6.69 and a half. So you're what, $1.30 apart, or $1.32 or thereabouts. $1.50 is more like a normal spread to begin with. So it's narrow. And you've all told me that this 670, 680, are, I've heard for a long time that this is kind of the range where we top in on new crop corn. So I'm trying to put it all together and thinking, well, is there a reason?
A couple of things here. First off, when you look at July wheat and you look at it feed value equivalent, it's roughly about 720 for July corn. And that's below where July corn closed the week. Secondly, if we are going to have weather play a game, if we are going to get the trade excited, it may be that they buy the December and not the July. And the December contract's still in a pattern off the March low, can have one more run to a new high yet before that one's potentially completed, at least the move up off the March low.
And I think we have a problem with wheat in Canada, wheat in the northern plains of, are we going to get that planted? And how much are we going to tear up? I've got clients in Nebraska, Kansas that are, they've said the rains that supposedly are going to come or have come aren't going to help because we've already got wheat gone and they're going to plant beans and corn.
Based on the fundamentals, on the short supply of corn, old crop, what figures to be a tight supply of new crop corn at the end of next year, is 670 a high enough price to protect and or sell? Basis December.
I would be looking at selling new crop December and buying calls further out. I think we can still go higher.
I don't think you not sell something at these prices, because if you don't, that's not good risk management. I think that's important here. You know, whenever you've been in a bull market, anytime you've been in a bull market, who's a bear at the end? Not a soul. And the other thing that's starting to float into this mix in here that we really do have to appreciate, we started 2 weeks ago, Goldman Sachs told their clients to go underweight from overweight in their commodity position. Morgan Stanley has now done it. You know, you're seeing big money going, you know, the risk reward in this game is getting huge. And once your money leaves, you may have rallies, but they also don't have lasting power either.
Yeah, I guess the thing I've been saying lately, you know, you can look at price. Hey, are we going to go ahead and sell some? Are we going to protect it? The way that I look at this thing, I don't know for sure whether I want to get super bullish at these prices. It's pretty easy to get bearish at these prices for people, and even with the fundamentals. The main thing, though, is income. If you can't be profitable at 670 corn, you know, basis the board, then I think maybe you're doing something wrong.
Soybeans, May contract at 1393 and a half, top for the week, bottom at 1334 and a quarter, settled at 1392 and three quarters. It was up 12 and a quarter. November futures finished down 8 and a quarter at $13.74 and a quarter. We heard earlier that it was one of them on the other side of the corn market, one of the two. Wheat was the opposite one. Are you wanting to sell beans, too, and take your profits there?
Well, I think beans are a pretty good sale in this area. I think that they're very profitable. You know, a lot of it, of course, depends upon the individual producer and where he's at this point. If he hasn't sold anything yet, congratulations, and go ahead and get some sold.
I think beans are a sale. I think corns are a sale, too, as far as cash. And, I, you know, at these prices, lock some in. I'd want to lock 40% or more of my crop in cash-wise. And I really think, you know, that's what we're talking about, is getting the price you need to make a profit. And if you want to stay in the market, go buy calls.
We're talking about risk management. And I think too often when you get into bull markets, a lot of people tend to lose sight about that at this point, really stepping back from the fray and deciding, can I make money at this? And if I can, do I not make a sale? You know, you have to manage your risk in any kind of a bull market as a producer himself. And if you lose sight of that, you end up ultimately probably ending selling crops below where you could have at an earlier date.
So is everybody in agreement at this point, and we're talking about risk management, that there is enough profit in both the corn and the soybean market to make the sales, to pull the trigger? Yeah?
Most definitely. And, I to go along with what Pete said, I'd like to see guys getting 30 to 40%. And then, you know, I want to protect some as well. You know, you can step in here and sell a decent corn call and buy a put and lock in one heck of a price. You know, whenever they're willing to throw 20 cents at you for a $9 call, if I'm a producer, I'm willing to let the market run towards $9, make a couple margin calls, and be pretty happy if I do sell my cash for $8 or $8.50. So I think a guy needs to be protecting at least 40% and upwards of that.
Say we have, say we get it planted in the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks, that we really start to move. It actually happens. We have a normal growing season. What kind of price tag do we put on new crop corn once we get to the fall?
That's a tough question, but I do think if we do get started here right away, the general consensus is that the market's going to have a tough time here in the next week or two. Once planters get rolling, that just goes without saying. What are we looking at for fall? I still think that, the 5-5.50 level would be supportive with a really good year.
4.5 to 5.
I think you could drop a buck and a half real easy on corn and more than that on beans if we get her planted well. And I mean, just this week we hit 684 and then all of a sudden we were at 647 and it was all over just a forecast. If we actually get it planted, you're dropping a bunch out of it.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This is the April 29th edition. Our guest in a moment will join us, Tom Baez of Growth Energy out of Washington, D.C. Our panelists in studio include Matt Bennett, Dale Durkles, and Pete Manhart.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Rain, go away, and don't come back till later in May. That's a refrain being heard throughout Illinois this week as heavy rain drenched the southeastern half of the state, leading Illinois toward a record wet April. Rainfall this week was 5 to 8 times normal in the southeastern third of the state and 1.5 to 5 times normal across the northern two-thirds, with the smallest amounts found in west-central Illinois. The many days of rain with little dry weather in between has put a halt to spring planting activities. The situation is just a little less dire in northern Illinois, where rainfall the last 30 days has been closer to normal. However, soil temperatures there are still running in the mid-40s to low 50s. Air temperatures this week exhibited a wide range across the state, from 4 degrees above normal in southeastern Illinois to a chilly 6 degrees below normal in northwestern Illinois. More rain is on tap this weekend as another cold front moves through the state, with the heaviest rain likely to be where it's needed the least, in southern Illinois. However, once that system moves out of here on Monday, it looks like much of next week will be warmer and drier. The next chance for rain looks to be Thursday or Friday, but it appears that may only be scattered showers and thunderstorms ahead of a cold front. 5 days of dry weather will certainly help, but 7 to 10 would be better. That would give time for flooding rivers and streams to subside and fields to dry out. However, stringing together 10 days of dry weather in the spring is tough to do in Illinois. Keep your fingers crossed. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. On the 29th day of April, our guest today on the phone line is Tom Baez. He's an Indiana farmer, and you might recognize his name as the head of the National Farmers Union during the Clinton era. He's since taken on the role of CEO of Growth Energy, what I'll call an ethanol advocacy group. Mr. Baez, thank you so much for taking the time for joining us from your Washington, D.C. office today.
Oh, it's my privilege. I learned a lot while I was on there.
Well, we're hoping that you could teach us a bit as well. Talk to me first about the political climate for ethanol in D.C. at this point.
It's pretty rough. It's kind of like the weather in the Midwest. Obviously, there's a number of critics out there. There's a pretty big, a deep-pocketed industry that doesn't want to see any alternative fuels enter the marketplace for their to protect their own markets. And as Congress struggles with a number of really big-picture issues, number one, the budget deficit, number two, what to do on energy policy, I think we're going to see even more discussion about both ethanol, but also oil and gas and other energy sources beginning next week when Congress returns.
Yeah, Tom, when you look at this, what you're talking about as far as the government goes, what do you feel is going to happen with mandates if we continue to rally this corn market? And more importantly, if you're a farmer and you have farm ground in Indiana, what are you looking at it with your producer hat on as to maybe look at this, you know, potentially not only selling some crop for this year, but locking in some crop for the following years based upon what, you know, could happen?
Well, first of all, putting my farm cap on, I had you guys on mute, but I started chuckling because basically I think your advice to people is what I heard when I was a young man first starting to farm was you never go broke selling at a profit. You go broke waiting for that absolute high, and as we've all seen throughout the course at least of my nearly 60 years around here, has been the highs don't last very long, and the lows last longer. It's great that people are getting a good price, and we're all for that. And I think that's been a great for rural America because not just corn prices have been high this year, but as you guys had indicated, we got good prices for soybeans, for wheat, for cattle, for hogs, even for cotton. And that's usually a rare one itself. So we're all for seeing rural America survive.
To kind of direct you back to where I think Matt wanted to go, you know, on the political climate, and you said it's rough. You know, we occasionally hear over the last couple of weeks, especially, you know, you hear some scattered talk where people start talking about, you know, can corn go to $9, can corn go to $10, put a number on it. What kind of political ramifications for the ethanol business would a $9, $10 corn have?
Well, I think as the prices continue to rise, it always puts pressure on all the end users. You know, one of the real culprits in all this, and I think as you guys talked about the markets and how much they could drop, and a lot of these are variables that, you know, whether it's the weather, whether, oh, is China going to buy more or China going to buy less, you also have to consider that the thing driving the increases in a lot of commodities has been the speculation by non-commercial users, both in the commodity markets, farm commodity markets, as well as energy commodities, et cetera. We've seen in just last year, last June, you know, corn was $3.50 a bushel. And today, I forget what you said the close was $7.50, over $7.50. That's not been driven up because of the increased demand in ethanol. Obviously, you have some tightening of the markets, but we saw a flood of non-commercial interest money enter those commodity markets after Russia decided to shut off their wheat exports. People saw the opportunity to make money. And I think, as one of you said, a bull market only lasts. It doesn't have lasting legs if you don't have a lot of money in there supporting it. We've seen this picture before. We saw it happen in 2008. And what goes up can come down. It can come down really fast.
I hear talk about all the time about if we didn't have ethanol and gasoline, it would save us 12 cents a gallon or this, that, and the other. But if you actually took ethanol out, 10% of the fuel, and just didn't have that, what would it really do to gasoline prices?
Well, no doubt they would go up. We trade, and you guys probably have the data there. We're currently trading at the rack about 50 to 60 cents a gallon cheaper than straight gasoline. And most of that gets passed on to the consumers in a very competitive economic market. And all the studies we've seen range anywhere from 17 cents to a high of 50 cents, the consumer savings.
A couple of things happened in Washington, D.C. this week. They took a look at advanced biofuels and said, we're not going to make that. So they wanted to scale that back. What impact might that have on the non-advanced biofuels? And there's only one. That's corn-based ethanol. And the other is there's discussion about getting rid of tax incentives for big oil.
Yeah, the big oil story has really spurred, I think many members in Congress to take a look at that. Anytime you have those type of profits, the government obviously needs to reduce the deficit, and I don't think anyone would claim that the big oil companies couldn't afford to pay a little bit more of their share to help our nation in this situation. Whether or not it leads to legislation, I don't know. You know, what usually happens, and I think what you're going to see here beginning next week, on the House side, the House Republican leadership is going to push bills to expand drilling in the Gulf, in the Eastern Atlantic, in Alaska. Probably passes the House, doesn't go anywhere in the Senate. The Senate Democrats, conversely, are going to push for cutting taxes to oil companies vis-a-vis the big record profits they had. Again, probably doesn't get any bipartisan support. May or may not make it through the Senate, only because the Senate has these, basically every senator has the right to filibuster any bill. In order to cut off that unlimited debate, it takes 60 votes. At the end of the day, does anything happen? I don't think it really happens until these guys get serious about rolling up their shirt sleeves and taking a look at comprehensive energy policy. And as you guys should probably know, we at Growth Energy suggested just that a year ago. We called it our Fueling Freedom Plan, but we said, look, we no longer have a problem producing ethanol. We have quite the opposite problem, similar to farmers. We normally overproduce. We're willing to take a look at those ethanol tax credits, redirect them into things that actually benefit the industry and benefit consumers, and that's flex fuel vehicle production and blender pumps, where we can compete in an open market, and we're willing to go away with any tax subsidies, any tax help. All we want is an access to an open market.
Is 15% blend a good thing for ethanol or not?
It is. It's been a struggle to get there, although I have to say, you know, it was a historic decision to ever get that blend wall cracked or a hole in it, because it lasted for 32 years. We clearly demonstrated that today's vehicles can burn E15 with no problem. We still don't have it in the marketplace. We still have some regulations, regulatory issues to address. Number one being, we're waiting on EPA to propose the rules on how to inform consumers that you can use this only in 2001 and newer vehicles, which, by the way, is about 70% of the vehicle fleet and about 80% of the fuel usage.
Tom, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you guys. Hey, can I call in and listen every week? I learned a lot. I might make money on the farm.
You know what? You can listen to us at willag.org. That's willag.org, Tom, anytime you'd like. And if you search my name on iTunes, you'll find it there as well. I do appreciate it.
That's great. No, I enjoyed being on here. Thank you guys.
Thanks, Tom. Tom Baez is with Growth Energy, where he serves as their CEO. Time for a final word from our analyst in studio, Matt Bennett of TGM.
I think these are very profitable levels, but they're only profitable if a guy takes advantage of them. So if you're not going to get a whole lot of cash sold, figure out your strategy and put it in place.
Dale Dirkholz of AgriVisor.
Sunday night, check the wheat market and check the weather forecast.
And Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities.
Volatile, have traps set to sell cash or protect the prices.
You've been listening to the April 29th edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. As I said earlier, you can always listen to us online anytime you'd like. We post everything from our pre-opening market report to the closing market report there in its entirety, and Commodity Week at WILLAG.org. Have a great week.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers, because everything they do starts with you.